Good evening. Tonight we are going to wrap up our series from 1 Samuel. Next Sunday night our class fellowships are going to begin for the fall. And Doug is going to be talking to us a little bit about Nigeria and also introducing us to the individual who's going to be stepping into the role that he has played over in Nigeria. So it's going to be an exciting time for us next Sunday night to have the opportunity to get to meet this particular individual. The following Sunday, we're going to start a new series from 1 Timothy. So we'll move from the Old Testament to the New Testament and start looking at the letter that Paul wrote to Timothy. Tonight, we're going to wrap up this series that we've been involved in seemingly forever, one of those forever series. It's been great for me in my study. I hope it's benefited you as well. There's so much we can learn from the pages of the Old Testament. We know that the Old Testament is a tutor. It's a schoolmaster that leads us to Jesus. And even way back in this ancient writing, we have so many things that are pointing us to Christ, pointing us to better days. When the American statesman Benjamin Franklin signed the Declaration of Independence on July 4, 1776, this was what he said. All of those individuals that were gathered there together, he made this statement to them. We must indeed all hang together. We better stay together, he said. We must indeed all hang together, or most assuredly, we shall all hang separately. The road from signing a document to achieving national unity was a long one and a costly one for our new country. But eventually, the United States of America emerged on the political scene and has been there ever since. Its two mottos summarize the miracle that was accomplished. E pluribus unum, out of many one, and also in God we trust. Those two mottos were the driving force behind our nation. The first tells us what happened, and the second tells us how it happened. The nation of Israel had a similar challenge. After the death of Joshua, Israel gradually became a divided nation. Instead of trusting the Lord, the Jews began to worship the gods of their pagan neighbors. The spiritual bonds that held all of the tribes together began to weaken and break. As we read through the Bible, sometimes we miss the tribal consistency of the Israelite nation. All of these tribes and how they interacted with each other, also how they interacted with God. Before long, people were doing what was right in their own eyes. And sometimes within each individual tribe would be going their own way, doing what they thought was right in their own eyes. And they cared very little about the covenant they had made with the Lord. Then the people, we read in 1 Samuel, they called for a king. We want to be like everybody else. Give us a king. We want somebody to unite the nation. We want somebody to lead us so that we can be victorious over all of our enemies. We know that God answered their request and gave them Saul. King Saul's reign surely reminded the nation that their greatest, most important need was to trust God and obey His word. 1 Samuel is a continuation of Israel's story. This book shares with us what happened that culminated with Israel and Judah in captivity. The big mistake of Israel was wanting to be like the other nations. We just want to be like everybody else. Give us a king so we can be like everybody else. That was a huge step in the wrong direction. That was a huge step towards captivity. Just let us be like everybody else, Lord. It wasn't until David appeared on the scene that national events began to take a different turn. And a light appeared at the end of the tunnel. David was anointed by Samuel, and Samuel was the son of Elkanah and Hannah. 1 Samuel can be described by the people that emerged from the text. As we examine the main characters, we will see four successes and two failures. And we will let these individual stories from 1 Samuel serve as a summary for our study. The story begins with Hannah, a humble woman whose submission and faith in God are an example for us to follow. The name Hannah means grace. If you remember way back when we started this series, we examined this lady who desperately wanted a child. And she certainly lived up to her name. She was a gracious woman. God gave her the grace she needed to suffer the insults that were hurled at her by other people. She received the grace that she needed to speak kindly and gently when she was misunderstood and criticized. And God gave her the grace to conceive a son and dedicate him to the Lord. We look at Hannah's life, we see a woman of faith and patience. She was patient at home, waiting for this opportunity to have her own child. She was patient with the high priest Eli when he falsely accused her of being drunk. There were times when life was very difficult for Hannah. And we can't let that escape us. As we look at stories of people, real people in the Bible, we see some of the difficult times they had, and Hannah had her share of difficulties. But she persevered in her faith, and she eventually won the victory. She realized what too many of us seem to forget at times. God works in and through common people to accomplish His will. God did not ask Hannah to lead an army as He did Deborah. He didn't ask her to intercede with a king to save the Israelite nation as He did with Esther. He simply asked her to fulfill her heart's desire and give birth to a son, be a mother. 1 Samuel, it's a book that's filled with so many storylines. We read stories of treachery, bloodshed, and confusion. But it begins with a great woman, a graceful woman, a faithful woman, trying to serve the Lord. And Hannah is one of the success stories. She's a picture of success from 1 Samuel. And I don't want us to forget about her. We read about Hannah so many months ago. But her story is an enduring example. She shows us how to be successful in the eyes of God. If you want to be successful to God, just be faithful. Trust Him. And that's what Hannah did. Our next story is that of Eli. Eli was a compromising priest. He was an indulgent father who failed to discipline his children. That is a powerful lesson for us today as parents. One of the responsibilities that we have as parents is to discipline our children. God hasn't called us to be our children's best friend. He has called us to discipline them, to train them up to know God. And sometimes we're too worried about being our children's best friend instead of providing them what they need. We can still be close to our children and provide them what we need according to God. And what our children need, they need consistency. They need discipline. They need consistency in discipline. The picture we get of Eli, as you think of him, this is the image I have. A fat old man sitting on his special chair as he directed the affairs of the tabernacle, all the while waiting and closing his eyes to what he saw and his ears to what he heard. That's what I picture with Eli. That's what we see from him in the Bible. He was a man who had a big responsibility, an important role for God. But he failed to do some things within his home, and it cost him dearly. As we look at Eli, he's a complicated figure because it's easy for us to point out the bad things, to focus on the negativity. But he also did some good things. He blessed Hannah's prayer. He also taught Samuel the truths of God's word and instructed him concerning the work and the ways of the tabernacle. He provided for Samuel what he should have provided for his own kids. He should also be commended for encouraging young Samuel to listen and respond to the voice of God. When you look at the last day of Eli's ministry, it was a difficult one. Maybe if you're growing close to retirement, you think about your last day at work. What's it going to be like? Your very last day, your day before you're able to retire and move on to a different role in your life. Eli's last day of ministry, it was difficult. It was challenging. His two sons died. The ark was captured by the enemy. And his daughter-in-law died giving birth to a son. It's a pretty rough day. Eli was not a great spiritual leader. That was his big failure. But he was one small link in the chain that led to the anointing of David and eventually the birth of our Redeemer. Even Eli, as you examine his life, the good and the bad, Eli is pointing us to Jesus, pointing us to our Redeemer. And then we come to Samuel. a faithful servant of God. Samuel was born at a time when the nation and its religion were stagnant. The Jewish leaders, they wanted a king, someone who could unify the people, someone who would lead them in battle. Samuel saw this for what it truly was. When Samuel heard the request of the Israelites, he was mad. He didn't like it one bit. And he tells him, "What are you doing? What are you thinking?" But it was God who reminded Samuel, "They're not rejecting you, Samuel. They're rejecting me." God was their king. God was the one who was leading them. God was the one who was fighting for them out on the battlefront. And it was the Israelites who were wanting somebody else in that role. "God, give us a king. Give us somebody who will lead us. Give us somebody who will fight for us." Do you see what was going on there? Everything that God was, everything that God wanted to be for the Israelites, they said no to. "Oh, we don't want you, God. We want somebody else. We want a human being. We want a king just like everybody else." Despite Samuel's warnings, the nation ventured into the realm of being like everybody else. Now, I mentioned that 1 Samuel is just a continuation of the story that led to Israel and Judah in captivity. If we have in our heart the desire to just be like everybody else, it's going to cause the same result for us. We're going to end up in captivity. Our captivity is going to be a spiritual one. We'll end up enslaved by sin. It won't be the Assyrians. It won't be the Babylonians. It will be sin that enslaves us. Because if we just follow what everybody else is doing, if we just act like everybody else, if we want to be like the world, we're going to become worldly. We're going to be to do what we want, when we want, and that's going to separate us from God. And instead of God being our master, instead of God being our ruler, instead of us submitting to God, sin becomes all of that for us. Sin becomes our master. Sin becomes our king. Sin becomes our ruler. So if we're not careful, we'll do the very thing that Israel did. "Just make me like everybody else." We need to be careful what we ask for. Samuel, he anointed two kings during his lifetime. He helped Saul get off to a good start, and he tried to counsel him in the ways of the Lord. But it becomes apparent to Samuel and to everybody else that Saul had very little spiritual discernment. And so next, Samuel anoints a new king, God's king, David, the son of Jesse. Every leader needs a Samuel. Every person needs somebody like this in their life. A person who's close with God. A person who's appreciative of the past, but willing to follow God into a new era. Every leader needs a Samuel. A man of faith, a man of encouragement, who sees the hand of God at work where others only see confusion. Samuel was a constant force for good for the Israelite nation. He was a faithful servant in the midst of a faithless nation. I'm sure we've all known great leaders in the church, great individuals who have provided so much leadership, who have passed on. And we've experienced that void that's left. When individuals pass on or move on, I can only imagine how Israel felt when Samuel passed. The guidance, the mentorship, everything that he provided for the nation. It was something every person needs. It was something every nation needs. Next, we move to Saul. Saul is one of the failure stories here in 1 Samuel. I want to share with you some things that have been written historically about Saul. Someone wrote, "I know of no more unhappy character than Saul when God had departed from him. But somehow there was not the anguish in the soul of Saul that there would have been if he had ever really known the Lord. After Samuel anointed him, he was turned into another man, but he never became a new man." Also consider these words. the man in his government of Israel, speaking of Saul, he was a warrior and nothing more. He was never a shepherd. He held a spear, not a shepherd's crook. How many stories did we read about Saul where we read about his spear? That spear that always seemed to be right by his side. It was as if Saul was more concerned about keeping that spear close to him than he was about keeping God close to him. If I only have my spear, if I only have this weapon, this physical tool, then I'm the king and everything's going to be all right. And it seemed like he grasped that spear and he never wanted to let go of it. Even the opportunities that David had to kill him. When Saul was asleep at night, his spear was right there by his head. I have to keep it close to me. How much better would Saul have been as a king if he would have had that same mindset, that same attitude toward God? I got to keep God close to me. I can't let God get away from me. I have to keep him close here to my mind, close to my heart. But Saul, he seemed to be more concerned about that spear than he was about God. When God calls people to serve, he knows their capacity for doing the work, and he wants them to be successful. He will never abandon his people if they trust and obey. And if we were going to look at why Saul failed, if we examine his life and we're trying to say, okay, this is why Saul failed. This is why he wasn't successful. He didn't trust and he didn't obey. Sometimes when we sing songs or we hear certain phrases, it seems so simple. We sing the song, trust and obey, for there's no other way. That just rolls right off the lips. Such an easy thought to think about. But what a big challenge to live. To trust. To obey. That's where Saul failed. He did neither. When God is left out of the equation, the answer is always zero. So if you have a test on math, and God's not there, and you put zero, maybe your teacher will give it to you as right. Probably not. Centuries later, another Saul appeared on the scene. Saul of Tarsus, who quickly became known as Paul. Very likely that Saul of Tarsus was named after King Saul. They came from the same tribe. He said he was the least of all saints, which is quite a contrast to the Old Testament Saul. King Saul, we learned, he committed suicide on the battlefield. That's how he died. But his namesake died a martyr outside the city of Rome. Before his death, the Apostle Paul wrote the following to Timothy. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. King Saul wishes he could have said those words at the end of his life. Our next character that we're going to briefly look at is Jonathan. We could describe him as a generous friend. British composer George Matheson called Jonathan a rainbow in a storm. You never find Jonathan speaking a pessimistic word. You never find him questioning God's ability to accomplish what had to be done. He and his armor bearer challenged the Philistine outpost and won. Jonathan risked his life to help David. And Jonathan, maybe this sets him apart more than anybody else. He didn't mind being the second man. He didn't mind being second place. He was okay with the throne being passed to David when it should have been coming to him. He was okay with that. He was okay that the line was not going to be passed through his father down to him concerning kings. Jonathan leaves behind for us an enduring example of what true friendship looks like. Honest, loving, sacrificing, seeking the welfare of others, always bringing hope, encouragement when the situation is difficult. So many times we find Jonathan encouraging David when it was tough, helping David through some very hard times. Jonathan never achieved a crown on earth, but we can be confident he'll receive one in heaven. And then we end with David, a courageous shepherd. David was a great man, And he served God in a great way. When we think of 1 Samuel, it's always the story of David and Goliath that comes to mind. This great victory that launches David onto the scene. He is remembered for that great victory. He is remembered for all the psalms that he wrote. He is remembered for the victories that he delivered for God and for Israel. He was a great soldier, a great military leader. But for David, there was something more important than any of that. When you really examine his life, when you look at the Psalms, David simply wanted God. That was more important to him than anything else. If you were to talk to David when he was out shepherding his father's sheep, before he was ever king, when he was just a shepherd boy, and you would talk to him about what was important to him, and if you would ask him at that moment in time, what's more important, David, being king over Israel or having a close relationship with God? I think that would have been an easy answer for David. He wanted God above anything else. And when we look at the life of Saul, we certainly can't say that. Saul wanted power. He wanted glory for himself. He wanted fame. He wanted all of the physical things that were attached to being king over Israel. David, he simply wanted God. Now we know that David wasn't perfect, and he never claimed to be. Even through the stories that we've read about David, we see good. The faith that he had to step out on the battlefield to take on Goliath, we also see some bad. A lack of faith, not believing God would deliver him over Saul, running away into enemy territory instead of standing firm. But David, through it all, his heart was fixed. This young man, who was a man after God's own heart, that was most important. His consuming desire was to glorify God and finish his work. For David, the world was alive when he was with God. And the highest honor one could have, higher than being king, was to be God's servant and have relationship with him. When you look at David's life, it's easy for us to frame it by two events. So many people, when they think of David, they think of Goliath or they think of Bathsheba. When you think of David, what I hope you'll think about is relationship with God. Because that's what he wanted. That's what he desired. Though on occasion he wandered, though on occasion he wavered because of doubts, David believed God and he trusted him. We could describe doubt as a temporary relapse of the heart, while unbelief is a permanent rebellion of the will. David may have had doubts, but his belief persisted. He was a unique blending of soldier and shepherd, musician and military leader, commander and commoner. In spite of all his sins and failures, he was Israel's greatest king. That is, until Jesus came along. Four successes emerged from 1 Samuel. Hannah, a housewife. Samuel, a prophet and a priest. Jonathan, a prince. And David, a shepherd. And we also witnessed two failures, Eli and Saul. This book could really be summed up with the word success. There are things that we need to do to be successful in the eyes of God. Hannah models those things. Samuel modeled those things. Jonathan and David modeled those things. And Eli and Saul, they show us what not to do. Things that we should avoid. Success is found by following God. Now listen to that. Success can be found by following God and teaching others to do the same. So if we just choose that as our definition, this is what we're going to go with. Success is following God and teaching others to do the same. Eli failed one way. He failed in teaching others, while Saul failed the other way. He himself, he didn't follow God. if you want to find success in the eyes of God, do these things. Follow God and teach others to do the same. That's it. That's a wrap on 1 Samuel. 28 lessons over this great book from the Old Testament. So many valuable things that we can learn as we study the pages of the Old Testament. The most important is that it points us to Jesus. All of this points us to better days. Days when the Messiah would actually come, when the true king would be here, not to set up a physical kingdom, but to establish a spiritual kingdom, his church. And tonight, another opportunity to become a part of that kingdom. If you need to be baptized into Christ, or if we can pray with you, please come as we stand and sing together.